you've got super high achieving, well-meaning people who really care about doing their job well, it's hard to take things away.
Today on In Session, Leading the Judiciary. Lydie Klotz, author of Subtract, The Untapped Science of Less, shares how subtracting before adding can create better outcomes, especially when we are clear about what we want to accomplish. Though counterintuitive, Klotz's innovative research proves that subtracting doesn't necessarily mean doing less. Rather, it's an important first step for individuals and organizations that want to improve processes and solve problems. Lydie has also written several research articles, and his work has appeared in journals Nature and Science. And he shared his research on subtraction on NPR's podcast, Hidden Brain. He is an interdisciplinary professor of engineering, architecture, and business at the University of Virginia, and has secured more than $10 million in competitive funding to support his and others' work in the science of design. Before joining academia, Lydie played professional soccer. Special thanks to today's host, Lori Murphy, Assistant Division Director for Executive Education at the Federal Judicial Center. Lori, take it away.
Well, Lydie, we're so happy to have you today. Thanks for being with us.
Of course. It's a pleasure to be here, Lori. Thank you.
So, Lydie, what do you mean by subtraction? And why is it important for leaders in organizations?
It's a great question to start with because it can seem so simple, but if you don't define it, we're not going to get anywhere. So subtraction is changing something from how it is to how you want it to be by taking something away. And so much of what we do in the professions is to change something from how it is to how we want it to be, whether that's a doctor trying to fix a patient, an engineer trying to work on a bridge. Subtracting is one of the options that we have, but we don't seem to use it very much.
So you say that subtraction doesn't always mean doing less. I'm already a little confused. Help me understand the difference.
Yeah, I think that's another kind of crux of the issue here is that so often we combine those two ideas. You see a really streamlined document, or you see even like a modernist piece of architecture, and you think, okay, that is a result of doing less. But in so many cases, subtraction actually means doing more. One of the reasons we don't do it a lot is because our first thought is, what can we add? And then we add and move on without even considering subtraction. We have to do a little more mental work to think of subtraction. If you look at it in an organizational level, for example, if you want to remove a reporting line in an organization, you have to have put the reporting line there in the first place. There's more steps because you added, and then after doing the adding, you have to do a subtraction. And so I think it's really great to bring up right from the top that this isn't doing less. And most of these subtractions that bring you to something that is preferable to where you were are actually taking more cognitive effort and more physical steps, but it's worth it in a lot of cases.
I want to build on that for a moment. You said that we often don't even consider subtracting. How did you notice that?
The way that I figured it out, or the beginning of the way that we figured it out, I guess, is I was playing Legos with my four-year-old and we were building a Lego bridge. And the problem we had was the bridge wasn't level. And I went to solve this problem. I turned around behind me to grab a block to add to the shorter column. And by the time I had turned back around, my son had removed a block from the longer column and he had a level bridge and was moving on to the next thing. And we since did a lot of studies with three other really smart researchers to show what happens to people is what happened to me in that moment, which is this thing that I wanted to make better. I wanted to have a level bridge. And my first thought was to think, hey, what can I add to this? And if my son wasn't there, I would have added and moved on and never even considered this whole other class of options. We studied in a lot of different contexts to become pretty convinced that that was the way that our minds are approaching this.
I wonder, Lydie, is this a function of being an adult?
That's an interesting question. Between 18-year-olds and 60-year-olds, for example, we didn't see any correlation based on age with how people were doing with this. Our studies weren't designed to look at that, so I wouldn't say that there's definitely no correlation.
as adults, you get to a certain age and you've acquired a lot of knowledge. And you say in the book, we spend more time acquiring knowledge than distilling it. Mm-hmm. So is subtraction a necessary part of distilling what we know? And how do you recommend we do that?
I think it's probably the most powerful place we can use it in our mindsets, right? If we can think of things that are things that we've always held to be true and then realize that, oh no, we should subtract those from our mental models because, you know, education scholars study this and they actually describe it as constructivism. It's like you've got this mental model, you take in some new information and you put it on top of the mental model you have. It's really hard, even when new information conflicts with what you already think, to get rid of something that is already there. We're talking a lot about my son. This is another son and Lego example. He's a Santa Claus believer. And when he got Legos from Santa Claus for Christmas 2 years ago, he said, "What the heck is this?" I said, "What do you mean? You asked for Legos." And he said, "Yeah, but Santa Claus can't make Legos. He only has the wood and the things in his workshop." And I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, for Legos, Santa, he just works directly with Amazon." And and my son was like, "Oh, great. Let's move on." And I mean, we all don't kind of do it to that extent, but that is our tendency, is to, instead of subtracting something from our mental model, we kind of massage it to make it work with the new information. And so, yeah, I think subtracting, questioning the mindsets that we already have. If I look back at the things that have been most transformative for me over the last 5 to 10 years, it's been things like, I mean, I never thought there was a perfectly level playing field in the United States, but I certainly have been shown, especially having kids and George Floyd murder, right? You see my kid walking into school and you see some other kid walking into school and realize that no, they don't actually have even close to an equal playing field. And that's sad, but it's also powerful to recognize it because it gives you things that you can work on. So I think questioning the things that you believe deeply, but then also just kind of controlling the input of information. I mean, it's so easy to produce information now. And this is what an amazing example of taking advantage of all the ways that we can get information across. So now it's like we're doing this interview, talking about a very specific thing for a very specific audience that's directly related to their work. And that's probably time well spent. You can even kind of multitask while listening to this. But so much of the information that's out there is just designed to steal your attention, and not only for the time that it's stealing your attention, but then 3 hours later when you're thinking about the, you know, the cat video or whatever that you clicked on. And, you know, maybe that's what you want to do, but if it's not, then that's kind of distracted. So really paying attention to what information we allow in. And then I think that goes with leaving time to distill, because I know for myself, when I started looking at this research on how we process stuff and how much information we accumulate, I was like, well, maybe I don't need to run on the treadmill while watching the news, while listening to a podcast. And it was well-meaning. It was like, I need to know what's going on with the news. I want to listen to this podcast because it's cool information. But running was my time where I could process things. So just being aware of that and leaving space for the processing, for the distilling, I think could go a long way.
Mm-hmm. And what comes to my mind is getting rid of a bit of the noise so that we can focus on the signal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a pretty common theme with subtraction, is that people will say, well, Lighty, what should we subtract? Should I subtract this podcast, that podcast? I don't know. I don't know which one, which is the one that's aligned with your goal. And mm-hmm. that gives you clarity on what you could take away and what you should keep.
I want to dig in a little bit to the judiciary and the judiciary's culture. It seems that there are a few barriers within the judiciary and perhaps other organizations, but certainly the judiciary, challenges maybe. One is that when we add things, people tend to notice. Mm-hmm. And when we subtract, not all the time is it noticed. Mm-hmm. Another challenge that we suffer from in the judiciary is, well, this is the way we've always done it. And a third challenge is that very often the thing that we might subtract is actually the thing that someone feels tremendous ownership over. Right. Maybe they created it, or and they might have even created it decades ago. Mm-hmm. When you consider those aspects of our culture, how can leaders encourage those that they lead to consider subtracting while not feeling a sense of loss, while feeling acknowledged and even celebrated for doing good by subtracting?
Mm-hmm. I think building it into the process is the straightest answer to that. What I mean by building into the process is, you know, I think you're exactly right. It's not noticed. You've got super high achieving, well-meaning people who really care about doing their job well. It's hard to take things away. So what if in your annual review process, for example, it was said, okay, what are the three things you're doing? What are the three things you're currently doing that you're going to stop doing to clear space for this? Then now you're supposed to do it. It helps with the noticing because there it is written right on the paper. And so I think building it into the process is the fundamental principle there, right? And you can think about that at the level of annual reviews. You can think about the level of to-dos and stop doing. So if every time you think about your to-do list, you also think about stop doings, that's going to go a long way to making sure that you don't forget subtractions that could be helpful. And maybe even kind of balancing out that information in with distilling time. Right? It's like for every hour of podcast that I listen to, I'm going to set aside 5 minutes afterwards to just kind of process it and see how it aligns with what I already think and if there's anything I need to subtract from my thinking based on the new information. But the key is making it a process and not relying on yourself in the moment to think of subtraction, because you might not think of it, and also building into the process makes it acceptable and visible and a way to show that you're doing your job.
So when you talk about process, are you also talking about looking at maybe something that has been going on for a while and
yeah.
stepping back and saying, gee, if we were to start this today, how would we go about it? Would we have all these steps? Would it look the same as it does now?
Yeah, this wasn't in my book, but it's an example that I've encountered in my travels since. The company Asana, I mean, like any company, big organization, they have a lot of meetings, and their approach to it was to have a meeting doomsday. And this is written up really nicely on the internet by the person who ran the study at their company. And it does exactly what you're talking about. It changed the calculus from like going through every meeting to say, okay, do we need this? Do we need that? And now you're making all these decisions to like, okay, let's just clear the slate. And now the calculus is, do we need this? They immediately started to think about which ones they could add back in, but it totally flipped things around from do we want to subtract to do we want to add, which is a different question. And they saved, I'm going to not remember the exact number, but it was double digit hours per month per
wow.
employee that they saved. And again, I think what's cool about that, everybody is trying to do something about meetings, I imagine, but this was kind of really just flipped the framing around to say, hey, do we need this in the first place?
Budget constraints are a big issue mm-hmm. in the judiciary as elsewhere. And I hear a lot, I heard it last week, as a matter of fact, we need to do more with less.
Yeah,
and I think you're talking about almost the exact opposite.
And that's like such an engineer thing. That's what we think of as doing less is like just efficiency. And it's the opposite, because maybe doing less is the goal.
You said in your book, clarity on what could be a good subtraction is having a really clear idea of what you want the end state to be.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like in an organizational setting?
And this is from one of my favorite books by Chip and Dan Heath about Switch, How to Change. And they talk about having clarity on the vision. And they've got, I think it's Southwest Airlines. Some employee said, I had this great chicken sandwich and wouldn't our flights be so much better if we had these chicken sandwiches on our flights? And Southwest Airlines had this very clear vision of we are going to be the low cost airline. You know, maybe if an airline had the goal to like provide the best experience while they're on the airplane, then the chicken salad sandwich would make sense. But it didn't make sense in terms of that vision. And so it became something that you would take away. And it ends up being a really cool example, because it's easy to think of like things that are bad in all situations. Those, of course, are things you want to take away. But the chicken salad sandwich, it's like, no, that's good, but it's not good for our situation. It's not good for our vision. So having that clear vision is really important. Another example, Marie Kondo is very reliant on the vision, and she gets people to get rid of all this clutter that they've always had. And one of the things that she does is really force people to have a vision of their clean space in mind. And then if you fail to subtract something, you're going to lose that clean space. And you're focused on that instead of focused on the t-shirt that you haven't worn in 5 years. So it's the same basic principles. You've got this really clear idea of what the end state is going to be. It becomes easier to see that these specific subtractions are in service of that.
And it sounds like that might actually take some of the pain of subtraction mm-hmm. away, even for the owner of the thing that might be subtracted.
Yeah, that's a beautiful segue. I mean, perfect to bring it up now, because what's her other big thing? Does this shirt spark joy? And if the answer is no, get rid of it. If the thing that you're losing is the clean room, then you're not as focused on losing the shirt that is a way to get there.
I want to share a judiciary example with you and get your reaction to it. So the probation and pretrial services system had been making approximately the same number of visits, the same type of interventions, regardless of the different clients' risk factors. Officers are now administering validated risk assessment tools so that clients who are lower risk receive much less active supervision, while those who are higher risk receive much more active supervision and more resources. So to me, this feels like subtraction on a system-wide level. What say you?
Yeah, there are a lot of things I like about that example socially, but also illustrating subtraction. I also think it's a nice illustration of add and subtract. People will always be like, Lighty's trying to get us to subtract things. It's like, yeah, I want to remind you to subtract things, but it's not that I think adding is bad. It's a great way to solve some problems, right? It's just not the one we tend to think of that without my help. So you're doing both here, but nicely illustrates how these are complementary ways to solve problems. And instead of thinking of these as in opposition, you can only add or only subtract. And if you do one, you can't do the other. It's no, if adding is an option here, then hey, maybe subtraction is an option too.
So we just talked about a system-wide example, not just of subtraction, but also of addition. And you talk about mm-hmm. balancing the two. I want to go on a smaller scale now. Can subtraction be really very small? For example, would you consider it to be subtraction by your definition if we focus our emails, we eliminate some extra words and extraneous information, maybe format them a little bit better? Is that subtraction at a really small scale?
Yeah, definitely. That counts. Those are gateway subtractions too, right? If you set them up correctly, and if you're noticing that, hey, this is making my life better, maybe I'll try doing even more of it. I think also making them visible. So I've got one of my favorite examples, one of my colleagues, whenever she says no to a meeting, she also puts that time on her calendar. It's like this free time brought to you by saying no to this last meeting. So she subtracts, but then she also creates evidence of it, which I think then she sits down to do work in that time. And she's thankful for her past subtraction, which makes her more likely to do it going forward. So I think certainly those things count. And I think they can turn into bigger ones when you see how beneficial they are.
So in that example, your colleague is noticing the value of subtraction. How do we help notice the value, like in a group or a team or an office?
I think leading by example, certainly if you're a leader, is just to subtract even more. So it's like sometimes people don't notice that you're doing this intentionally, but I think there's a point with the short email. Steve Jobs, it's a cliche example, but nobody looks at the iPhone and says, oh, he couldn't think of buttons to put on that. One of the departments that I'm aligned with here, the chair will send out reminders of the weekly meetings when he cancels them, which I think is a really cool example of it's kind of being celebrated. And it's like, oh, great, we don't have a meeting. This is awesome. But it's also making it really clear that, hey, what matters is how we spend our time. Sometimes that's in a meeting, how we need to spend it. But other times, I want you all to be working on the things that you need to be working on. So,
right. It's making the invisible visible, as you said earlier.
Exactly. One of the reasons that Subtract wasn't taken as a book title is because it's not something that people think about in a positive light sometimes. to the extent that people might be turned off by that term, just describing it as something else. It's like, hey, we're carving, we're cleaning, we're streamlining, focusing people's attention on the good thing that's happening.
In your book, Lighty, you suggest a four-part model for encouraging more subtraction. You've got four words: invert, expand, distill, and persist. So I'd love you to share with us what each of those concepts mean and maybe illustrate them with an example.
Two examples we've already talked about. One is just kind of inverting the situation, like the meetings. The question is no longer should we subtract meetings, it should we add them back. That's an example of inverting. Also inverting how we talk about things. One thing that's really hard to get my graduate students to do is a shorter presentation, because they've done all this work and they're presenting to their committee and they're like, why would I do this on my dissertation to not say every single thing that I've done? And so if I frame it as subtracting, it's hard. But if I say making space for the audience, then that gets through a little bit more.
What about expand?
I think that one of the times that you can really find subtractions is by zooming out in your perspective, because you realize that something is being done somewhere else or by someone else or somewhere else in the system. This one for me, I think my parenting a lot, it comes up. So say I've got an opportunity to spend time with my son and he's out playing soccer with his friends. I could go out there and help him play soccer. But if I zoom out and be like, okay, what's going on here? And what's my goal with it? And my goal is for my son to have a growing experience. And I know that I was hanging out with him 2 hours ago. We're going to be having dinner together and he's happy and doing something with his friends now. And I just end up subtracting myself from that situation. And that's an example of kind of zooming out and seeing all the different things that are going on and realizing that what you're doing in that moment might not be necessary.
Okay, so we've got invert, expand, distill is next.
Distill, I mean, I feel like writing is probably the best example of that for me, because this is where you're constantly engaged in taking things away, but it's incredibly valuable. This, I'm sure, is the work of judges and the people who work with judges. It's like you've got all the information there, but the more that you can whittle it down, the more effective it will be. It's hard work, but I also find it really fun. Once you've got the words on the page and you're playing with them, it becomes more of a puzzle rather than this kind of overwhelming exercise.
Could you say something about persist?
I think that's, we talked a little bit about making it noticeable if you do it a lot. I think trying to keep going and keep going with the subtractions, actually you might get to a spot where they're noticeable.
And keep bringing it up, keep it in the forefront, and keep celebrating when we have a subtraction that makes things better or easier.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about was perspective. How does perspective play into this idea of subtraction and just looking at what's possible?
One of the examples that gets used a lot from my book is the balance bike. So these are the bikes that don't have pedals, which make it so toddlers can stride on top of them. The cool thing about that, I think, is if you look at how the guy came up with it, who invented the strider bikes, he was watching his kid ride a bike. And his epiphany came when he realized that the kid could provide the balance. So he realized that a toddler can actually balance. And so you don't need to have training wheels. You don't need to have some kind of third wheel or something like that. So he realized that there was some function that the bike had been providing that could actually be provided by the rider. And so again, it's a cool example of perspective. It allowed him to then subtract the pedals from the bike, which is the genius in that invention.
Lighty, what is one thing you wish you would have understood earlier about adding and subtracting, or just subtracting?
I guess that it's an act. I think I spent a lot of time really enamored with things that were the results of subtraction and trying to figure out what was special about them. And what I was really interested in, I think what's probably useful for most people, is how to get there. And that's this act of taking away. So that was kind of the mindset shift that the Lego bridge helped me with, and some other things. But that is something that took me a while to realize, and I think is worth reemphasizing for other people. And then I have like one other small, not small, but it's just, it's amazing how many people this has the potential to help. And I knew that, okay, we're missing out on this whole class of of options. I mean, that sounds as an academic, wow, that's a big deal. But then when you get to talk to people and see that doctors and lawyers and judges and people in organizations, they're really struggling with this. And it's nice to kind of offer some options that might be able to help with it. But it's also really helpful just to talk to them and understand how they're struggling with it, because I think that feeds back into my own research and my own thinking about it and helps me do that at a deeper and probably more, definitely more useful level.
Yeah. And I like the idea of really intentionality about the act of subtracting. So thank you. Lighty, where can we learn more about you and your work?
My parents gave me a good Google name. So, I mean, the book has all the best kind of consolidated information, but I have a website, lightyklotz.com. And if you Google me, you can see kind of the latest stuff that's going on.
Lighty, this was just a really interesting conversation. I'm not sure what I would have subtracted, but I am grateful that we got the chance to talk.
Well, that's why we have editors, right? So good job, Lori. This is a pleasure to do, and I really appreciate the work you do and the work that your listeners do. So thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lori, and thanks to our listeners. To hear more episodes of this podcast, visit the Executive Education page on fjc.dcn and click or tap podcast. You can also search for and subscribe to this podcast on your mobile device via Apple, Google, Spotify, or YouTube. In Session, Leading the Judiciary is produced by Shelley Easter. Our program is supported by Anna Glotchkova, Angela Long, and the entire studio and live production team. Thanks for listening. Until next time. This podcast was produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.